It's all right. We're clothed.
All right, welcome back, guys. Another episode, our third on Twitter Spaces here. And we got some interesting to talk about. But before I forget, because I forget every time, Sorry We're Close is brought to you by my friends over at WinBet. WinBet is bringing the excitement of Win Las Vegas to online sports betting. Whether you're a recreational player or a serious handicapper, WinBet is your ticket to every exciting wager, from straight bets to parlays, teasers, and any exotic proposition wager you can dream up. Sign up today and use promo code SSWC1, and after replacing your first $100 wager, you receive $100 to bet with. There's also $50 casino bonus for those New Jersey and Michigan for the first-time player. And again, promo code is XSWC1. There is no better way to enjoy sports than with extra winnings in your pocket to use for all your favorite bets. Betting is a team sport. Join the WinBet team and bet with the best. Our receiver to change terms and conditions. WinBet.com. No much training. Participating only available in Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Louisiana, Michigan, New York, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia. Pretty sure I've memorized that list by now. But all right, Sean, let's talk a little Davey Portnoy.
Okay.
He has started a new watch company, which is why he is recently in the news. I figured something was coming out of him because he is leaving. I don't know how long he has to stay at Barstool after the sale is finalized in February, but he is leaving. And so he started a watch company. I didn't necessarily see this one's coming. It's called Brick.
Is this like his new endeavor?
Yeah. And it's like, it's supposed to be like, it's called Brick because he's a big, like his, like one of his little phrases is Brick by Brick. He's like built Barstool and stuff like that. Which he, has like, he's got that one and like To the Moon, which I think is a popular one. I think a lot of people say that one, but so he called it Brick. And it seems as though the watch that everyone's talking about right now is this one particular one. I don't know if he's come up with multiples or if it's just the only one that he's come out with so far. But it's selling for $2,400, which is, as you would imagine, a higher-end watch. And he is getting heat because the watch community, as he calls them, the watch nerds, has come out and suggested that this particular watch that he's selling for $2,400 only costs him about $40 to make. So the markup is outrageous. And there is a company that would be, well, I guess based off how much he's selling this for, not really competition, but it is competition because they sell a very similar watch. In Movement, I believe the company's called. But it's like MVMT.
Yep, I've seen them on social media a lot, actually.
Yeah. So they have a very similar watch and selling it for like $210. So the claim that Dave is spending $200, $300, $400 to make each one of these watches may be true, but the counter argument to that is that obviously there's another company out there that's able to get it for cheaper. So although you might not be doing it, this watch still isn't that expensive of a watch and should be marked down lower, but you need to go find out where you can make it for cheaper. I guess that's kind of what the argument is here. And I mean, what's your initial thoughts on a watch company out of Dave?
Well, I mean, yeah, it seems a little random, but I mean, who really cares? Like, I don't think that he's incapable of starting a watch company. I think business is a pretty repeatable deal, whether it is what he does at Barstool or building a watch company or starting a bakery. Like, I think it's a pretty repeatable deal. Yeah, it does kind of feel like slightly off brand, but I guess the real debate here is the price point of $2,400 for a watch that a company like Movement is selling for $240. And I guess that's the contention. So are people contending that he's being greedy, that it's just a mispriced watch? I'm assuming it's the greedy thing, right?
I guess it's kind of greed, but it's more so of like you're selling. I think that it seems as though the vibe is you're selling a shit for $2,400. It's not a watch that, not to say shit, but when in comparison to what other $2,500 watches that are out there, you're talking about you're entering the Rolex world there. You're not selling us a Rolex and putting Brick on it as your own company with your own little spin on like a Rolex type watch. You're selling us a Movement that is $250, $220, whatever it costs, and marking it up as if it is a Rolex. So I think that is, I guess it may be a greed type thing, a stupidity type thing. Not really sure what it is. And I agree with you in the sense that he can probably start any type of business. The guy's a smart guy. I have seen, which I was always intrigued why, not why he was doing it, but it seems like he's moving towards that world. You've seen how my attire has changed over the course of the last, let's say, 2 years, Sean.
Right.
And he, I've seen him in a very similar world where he always made fun of, especially as far back as the Call Her Daddy brigade, where he's talking about suits. You know, all these suits come in and they want to do all these things, right? I see a lot of videos now because, you know, again, I'm friendly with a lot of people over at Barstool, and so I follow them and support those people. And I see them oftentimes in suits and kind of living more in that, I don't want to say higher class, but like more of that business type thought process, more of a world that would sell this kind of a watch. Because my initial thought when he started a watch company and a high-end watch company is, Dave is very influential, obviously. He's got plenty of people that follow him and plenty of people that can afford that kind of watch follow him. But, I mean, his clientele at Barstool is more of that, you know, regular guy.
Yeah.
You know, people that are going to buy movements, people that are going to buy nicer end watch, but maybe like one really nice end watch. They're not going to be watch collectors. And, you know, although I don't doubt that Dave can pull this off. You know, if he starts Barstool Sports the way he did it by handing out newspapers at the subway, you know, the guy knows what he's doing. So he can certainly do it, but it just wasn't the company I was expecting him to start right off the get to kind of go into that next part of his life where he's out of Barstool and now doing something different. But it's something that I believe, like I said, Dave can pull off, but if it really is a, you know, a $40 watch, I mean, whoever he hired to come do this with him, they really missed the boat here. I mean,
I think we got to ask the question of what does it cost him to make a Rolex? Well,
it seems as though, based off this watch community, you're talking about a few $100, depending on the Rolex. And you have a lot of Rolexes that have diamonds in them, so that changes the game. It seems as though, based off what people are saying in this TikTok watch community that are coming after him, it seems as though they expect a $2,400 watch to cost in that $2 to $500 range, and then you mark it up to that $2,500 price point. But I just bought my first actual high end watch at Breitling. I was going to an event. I was not anticipating buying this particular watch. Or any watch for that matter. I thought it was going to be an event where there was, you know, 60 people at it. It turned out the Breitling store on 59th and Madison in Manhattan was shut down for me and one of my business partners. So the pressure was on to buy something. But I also fell in love with this watch. It's a beautiful, beautiful piece. And, you know, I wonder if a watch thing. I always liked watches back in the day. I mean, I used to get, mom used to always buy me like Fossils, which I liked, and then I had like one Armani one that I really liked. I haven't really got into it much as of late. The Apple Watch really has taken me by storm. But, you know, getting into this world, but I mean, if the watch that I bought, you know what the price is. You know, if it said it cost them $1,000 to make, I'd be like, and you charged what? Like it would seem off to me. So I can understand people that are in the know of how these things are made and how much they cost being like, what the hell?
Yeah, but who's really criticizing Dave Portnoy on, like, it's not people who are looking at the margins of Rolex. Like, I'm looking this up right now, and like there are some things here with Rolex. Yeah, and there's varying things off of a quick Google that some people say it's a couple $100, $300 to $500 for the materials to create stainless Submariner, which I guess is a Rolex watch. I'm seeing this one, the cost to produce an average Rolex watch is between $2,500 and $4,000. This is from wristadvisor.com.
The much more higher end ones.
I mean, look, I mean, in business, the deal is this. The price is what people will pay for it, right? If somebody's willing to pay $2,500 for a watch, then that's what it costs. It's, you know, it's the it's all perceived value. There's no, like, you remember when you were a kid and you'd get those, like, the sports cards and you'd have the Beckett? that would list all of the cards, and then you could find out like how much your Shaq rookie card was worth. That's apparently a big thing again. There's no like that doesn't exist for business in watches. Like in my business, when I'm creating a product, I make the price up every time. Like this is what I want to make. And a lot of times I start with the price before I even make the offer. I'm like, okay, I want to make $1,000 per unit here. So what do I need to offer them to make that, you know, to make that worth it? And if I make a shitty offer, nobody buys it. And then it's like, that's on me. If Dave Portnoy is overpricing a shitty watch, then nobody's going to buy it. And that's how it works in everything. That's how business is. Like he'll use maybe his like built up equity that he has, his like brand equity, his character equity, in his like, you know, his reputation, and like the diehards, the Dave Portnoy diehards that can actually afford it are going to go out and they're going to go buy this thing, and then they're going to get it and they're going to say Dave sold me a piece of shit, and then nobody else is going to buy it, and it'll eventually belly up because they don't use a quality material. So it doesn't bother me literally even a little bit that he's marking up something that's super high. It'll eventually bother him, and the company will struggle because he's, you know, too big on his margins, and he wasn't spending enough on making a quality product, and the business will suffer, and he will either have to change, he will either have to make a better watch, or he can continue doing what he's doing because it's actually not that big of a deal. I think, you know, on the surface as a non-watch guy, that's not that big of a, it's not crazy to me. Like, I'm like, damn, like good business, good margins. I hope that works. I'm not rattled at all by the greed of it, or, you know, why, you know, I don't care that this is how he's, you know, setting this thing up. It makes sense to me and it works. And as long as it's a quality watch and it's worth the markup, then it is. I was just on his website, the Brick Watches website, and right in the description here, it says, this is a watch for people like myself who can afford a Rolex but don't need the status symbol on their wrist to do their talking for them. So who's really pissed off about this? You know,
I don't know that. Like, I don't know how much people are pissed off about it. It's more as people are being like, I mean, this was stupid. Like, why? Like, yeah, if you...
They're like saying, like, business-wise,
yeah,
it's a
like,
stupid
I mean,
move?
Like, my thing is, if you're talking about business, you're talking about a $2,500 watch. Yeah, maybe you'll get some people to buy it because of your Dave Portnoy. But the main people that are going to buy $2,500 watches are people that know at least somewhat about watches, or they have, you know, let's say a contact at like a Rolex or at a Breitling or something like that that's going to know watches for them. When your target audience here is going to be people in somewhat in the know of the watch game and what they're spending their money on, and, you know, if they go and see this watch, like, wait a minute, they're charging how much for this? You know, I just think it might not have been. I mean, if Dave can sell, Dave can sell. But you said like, everything is what you can sell it for. I mean, that's what we talked about with crypto. Is pretty much besides the utility of some of them, the other reality, it's, you know, what will the next guy pay for it? And so when you talk about watch, I mean, yeah, we're talking about how much. You know, does Dave hold enough value in people's heads to buy a watch, to buy a watch of this caliber, or of this much of a price point? Who the hell really knows? But, you know, when you're talking about people in the know of the watch community, if it was me in Dave's shoes right now, and I had people advising me on this and saying this is what's going on, this is what's happening, and then I had pushback from a lot of people, it seems like, you know, I mean, I'm not really in the watch world, although I do love watching on TikTok the live watch deals. I'm in that algorithm where these guys go into these stores in Manhattan with Rolexes and they negotiate. And they put it all on camera, and they're like, well, this is 23.5. And the guy's like, well, I can't do more than 18. They can always do more than 18. but it is. It's interesting. And you see some guys walk away. Like, it's not always – a deal doesn't always get struck. But these people – so I guess that's probably why I'm on this TikTok a little bit and getting a lot of this stuff. But it just seems like he's like, if you know anything about watches, you know you wouldn't do this. You wouldn't buy that. So if I was in Dave's shoes and people were advising me to do this, who knows? Time will only tell if this was a bad move or not. But if I was getting this much blowback from the watch community and being like, I would immediately call them and be like, listen, what are we doing here? Like, are these guys right? Are we in a bad spot? You know, are we in a little bit of a PR nightmare? Like, our target audience here is people that are going to have an idea about watches. You know.
Yeah, but Dave Portnoy is, like, the king of making negative press positive for him. Even, this reminds me a little bit of the Twitter stuff. Like, for the past month or whatever it's been since Elon Musk has taken over, the whole world, like, literally, I go on Apple News and everyone is like, Twitter crumbling, burning before our very eyes. It's going to, any day now, it's going to belly up and flop. And I don't, you know, I guess you never really know, but Elon Musk is sending out, like, the numbers, and it's, like, literally all-time highs in usage, sign-ups. Like, I don't think revenue, but all the advertisers are pausing right now. But, you know, like, all of the metrics that matter, like, are, like, rising incredibly. And even he, like, tweeted out, he's like, I hope they keep giving us this negative press because it's making our numbers bananas. And, you know, I think Dave Portnoy has fed off of that. Like, it's the playbook, man. Like, that's what he's followed for so long at Barstool and creating his brand. And it doesn't necessarily vibe with what you would think would be useful for a high-end sophisticated watch company. However, you know, there's potential. Like, that potentially doesn't matter. Now, how many people know about the Brick Watch Company? Now, how many people can go look at the Brick Watch Company? How many watch experts are going to go over there now and say, like, you're out of your mind. This is a good watch, you know? And, like, now they're able to use this media. Like, I'm on their website right now. I would never in a million years, I don't care literally a little bit about watches. And here I am on their website, like, scrolling around, checking stuff out, reading their things. And you got to imagine that you're getting tons of hits off of this because of this. And I do agree in the sense that, like, it's, you know, a buyer for this is probably looking for a little swag here and not looking for a controversial watch that some people think is garbage. But, I think that there's a chance that this kind of stuff really helps them.
You're surely going to get eyeballs, but the quick thought process here is the eyeballs that we're talking about right now and yours are completely useless to him. You know, you're going to get eyeballs, and I have no doubt that Dave Portnoy can turn around negative PR. I mean, he's had to deal with much worse than negative PR around his watch. So that's not the concern here. It's the concern is how many sales can he do? Me and you have talked about some things that I'm looking to purchase and things like that. And, the thing I always say is I have no problem spending a lot of money, but I never want someone to be like, you spent how much on this? That's what you spent on this? Like, no matter if the other person can afford that particular thing or not be able to afford that particular thing, like, you just never want to spend a lot of money and people be like, oh, okay, all right, sure, man. And, you know, like, when I went and bought that one particular watch at Breitling, like every time I see it, I'm like, that thing is fucking beautiful. It is a beautiful piece. And I love wearing it out. Like, I really feel... I'm really proud of that piece that I own. And, you know, when I have other people, obviously, you know, some people are just going to blow smoke up your ass, but there's other people that, you know, like, oh, wow, that's a beautiful watch. And that's the stuff you like. You like to hear that type of stuff when you're spending this kind of money. Some people don't give a shit, but I'm not one of those people. And I feel like I'm in the majority. And, you know, although Dave is very successful at turning around negative PR, like, if someone walked in here right now, I don't know much about watches, but someone walked right now in here with a Brick watch, and let's say I'm close with said person, you know, I'd probably make fun of him. I'd probably be like, well, it doesn't seem like that's got a great reputation right now. They're a big guy. You spent $2,500 on that?
Oh, I'd want to pick it up. I'd want to feel it. It better be weighty.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't like – it kind of looks like a standard watch face. Like, it – like that – like, you want some – you spend $2,500, you want some size, like a little thumpy thump, you know? Like, oh, look at this thing. Like it's a little noticeable on my wrist. Like, this could be – if somebody looked at this – said, hey, I just bought a new Fossil, I would be like, nice, here it is. This is what it looks like to me.
When I bought that one watch, some people had reached out and said, nah, I hate it. And I was like, okay, that's fine, not your taste. And then they were like telling me, "Oh, you should have bought this watch." Or I had one guy, he told me I should have bought like these two watches. And I went and looked them up, And it just was not my taste. I was like, you know, I started off making fun of him, be like, oh, now I know you don't have any good taste. But then, like, you, like there's you know, this the one you talked about. It's I think it's called, I don't think it's the Submarine. I think it's the Submariner. But regardless of what the name of it is, that's a very popular Rolex. A lot of people have them. And one, that immediately turns me off to it. I don't like something that everyone else has. But the other thing is I just think it kind of looks like a fairly regular watch. And I don't want that. That's not something – like if I'm going to go spend a few thousand dollars on a watch, like I'd rather spend a few extra $1,000 on a watch and that not many people have than just go buy, you know, the standard Rolex that so many others have. And the Rolex is a very nice watch. It's not my flavor. It seems like to be in the minority in that I like leather bands. I don't like the metal band ones. That's just not my cup of tea. I think the leather bands really look sharp, but it seems like a lot of people like the metal bands. And you know, that again, it's kind of like being a guy that's not a watch connoisseur, you know, I could, if I looked at this watch and you didn't have a brand name on it, you know, I might guess Rolex. I might guess something, you know, in the more of a cheaper price, but I'm not going to know, like, okay, I don't know what high-end watch company this is, but this is a fucking high-end watch. But some of the Rolexes, I'm like, oh, this seems like a nice watch, but I could be fooled. You know, some of those movement watches, they're $200, look great. You know, I mean, it's great in the commercial. I haven't seen one in person, but you know, some of them look really nice, like really sharp looking watches. And you don't need to spend a few thousand dollars in order to get a sharp watch. There's plenty out there that look just fine. And you know, again, when we're talking about this new watch company, though, you know what Dave is able to do with negative PR and all that good stuff. He's a mastermind at it, but. You know, when you're talking about who you're selling to here, you know, I don't know how much the Barstool market is involved in high-end watches, but it seems as though, like I said, I'm just taking a guess, but you know, I see him more in suits. I see him more. Maybe he's trending towards that type of lifestyle and not so much the old Barstool where he's going out on a field and running a 40-yard dash. And people are, you know, his old videos are not the same vibe he's giving off now. Very different Dave Portnoy than what you know. If you're an original stoolie, I'm not, but if you're one of the OG stoolies, as they call them, you've seen a transition from Dave from his younger days into now. You know, he's I think his early 40s. You're seeing a very different version of Dave Portnoy, which is what he's trending to. I'm the same way. Like when I tried to grow my own brand, you know, I'm that funny make fun of my baseball career guy. Who, you know, I had a 4,000 ERA. Everyone gets a good laugh out of that. And now I'm kind of changing what I want to be doing. You know, you're talking more, you know, I'm sorry we're closed now. We talk more business than we talk anything else. That's because it's more what I like now. I talk enough baseball. You know, when I sit down with Jared on the Red Sox podcast, you know, you oftentimes are on that damn thing for 3 hours. So I talk enough baseball with Jared. I get that out of my system. You know, I'm not a through and through baseball guy. I know a lot about baseball because I played for a long time. But, you know, that's just that was, you know, 20s Pat. And now I'm trying to do something bigger and in the business world. And now I have different interests now. And now I want to talk more about that. And that's why we do that over here. And I think you have the same way. You were a basketball guy. And then you went to that strength and conditioning world with the Lakers and the Diamondbacks and the Yankees. And now although you still have that kind of portion of your business, you know, you're still now in the business world. You know, you're in a different stage of your life, and that's why we sit here and talk about that rather than we talk about, you know, what, you know, you should do for Swaggy P when he has a tight quad. You know, that wouldn't be a very interesting conversation for either of us to have. We would probably be bored out of our minds. So it's a different stage of his of what he's doing now. And I'm sure if I had to bet on if he's successful or not, I would say yes, because he seems to have a good feel on how to pull these things off. But you know, who knows? You know, it seems as though from the outsider looking in, it would appear as though right now this at least the beginning of this watch might have been a miss for him and might not have been exactly what he was at least attempting to do.
Yeah, probably coming out of the gates a little bit weaker than he thought. But, I mean, a lot of you know, when you're Dave Portnoy, you're going to just attract a certain type of media. And
I feel like you got to, on some level, see that coming. That's, and you look at Twitter, Elon came out and he was talking about how, my favorite tweet of his was that, like, over the next few months, we're going to do a lot of dumb stuff. And as long as he's going at it with that mindset, like, look, like, we're just going to, we messed up, whatever, like, we need to increase the materials that we use, and then we're going to improve it and we're going to move on to the next thing, then the business will ultimately succeed. He obviously knows this. Like, he built a really successful business. He knows how to do the thing. As long as he's replicating and doing it again, he's fine. Yeah,
Elon's interesting with this Twitter stuff. I see him, I see these tweets. I love his tweets sometimes. And I don't know if they're all true because I'm getting them secondhand on, like, TikTok or something like that. But, like, you see some of these things where, like, someone had said, everyone seems to be mentioning, like, Elon fired 1,500 people and Twitter's still running just as good. What the hell were those 1,500 people doing?
And, yeah, seriously. I mean, they're pretty outspoken about the fact that there were a lot of freelancers.
And Elon had responded to the tweet saying that Twitter was running just the same. And he goes, no, we're running better. And, you look at these types of things, you're like, okay, well, sometimes you need that business mind to come in. It seemed that Jack Dorsey had moved on. We were in a bull market for however many years, and money was free flowing. So, when someone said that big budget started going up, and someone needed a needed an assistant, needed this, needed that, they started hiring left and right. Next thing you know, recession hits, and you need to pull the reins back in a little bit. And you realize that six people are doing the job of what one person could do. Or maybe more than that, 15 people are doing the job that maybe.
Well, think about real work. Like, how many people go to work and are, like, from 9 to 5, they're productive, they are getting shit done. And, like, this is the reason fantasy football exists and all these other things, right? Like, and I see all, like, the funny memes on TikTok about how, like, me going to work on a Friday and, going to check some emails and bring, call it a day. Like how many people, and I like, how many people are really going to work and like I'm really getting after it here today?
Not many, probably. I mean, there's certain people that do it, but I mean, just look at our work day, our work day, I do things for like an hour and I walk around the living room. I put on ambiance on YouTube. Some days I am busy. Like I'm around town. I'm doing different things. I got to go from here to there to here to there. Then have dinner at night. Sometimes these days happen. But I would imagine. Stephanie, for example, she's a good example. She works at Fox. She's a writer. She's out in Idaho right now. But she worked from here quite a bit during like the pandemic and such. It seems as though she's pretty diligently working for a good bit. I'm sure there's some time wasters in there, but I don't come out here and like Stephanie's making toast like me and you do. You know what I'm saying? Like, she's usually working. Whether she's on that thing Slack where she's got to talk to her employees, her coworkers, and writing stories and so on and so forth. That's really the only example I have of people 9 to 5 that are in a 9 to 5, like not sales 9 to 5s. Like, they're in 9 to 5s where they're doing a more traditional thing. But you look at Brian O'Connor, who's a sales rep for now at Tequila Seltzer Company, but once for Anheuser-Busch for 8 years. And very different type of work life. He doesn't need a grind every day. Seemingly almost only one day a month he needs to grind. So like you have these different professions, and then Elon Musk comes in and says, okay, well, you guys, I'm gonna 15 of you are grinding for 3 days a month. I can trim that down to one person, and just they have to grind now 4 days a week. Mm-hmm. But that's now we just cut $400,000 off our budget.
Yeah, they were saying they were losing like $4 million a day, or something like that, something crazy like that at Twitter. He's got to reel it in. The thing that kills me so much about Twitter is like people literally acting as if this guy does not know how to make money, and he's the richest man in the world by $100 billion. Like, he's $100 billion more dollars than Jeff Bezos. Like, why don't we give this guy a shot? You don't have a choice. You're giving him a shot regardless. But I don't know. People, just, I don't know. I guess it's, there's always controversy and things like this, but it just cracks me up. I'm like, dude, like this guy knows. Like I heard an article that said like he was trying to help, you know, convince the high performers at Twitter to stay. And one of the things he told him, he was like, listen, you stick around here, I know how to win. And I was just like, I want to be in that room. Like, I want to see what he's going to do, man. Like, I want to know, what does he know that I don't about how to, quote, win? Like, what is that? And that, to me, is like, I'm full Twitter right now. Because, as you can see, we're here on Twitter Space. We're here on Twitter Spaces right now. There's only one reason for that, and it's Elon Musk.
Yeah, I mean, I was interested about Twitter Spaces when they first came out with it before Elon's turn. But, yeah, I agree with you. I think Elon's pushing a good, you know, I don't want to say agenda, but like he's doing well over Twitter, at least it seems like from the outside. And he is a proven winner. Whether you say that he bought SpaceX, he bought PayPal, he bought the, like, similar to what I do, I just buy successful companies.
I think he built PayPal. I think he built SpaceX. He did Tesla. Not build no, yeah. Tesla.
So, like, all, you know, whether you believe that or not, but, like, you know, there are plenty of people that are like, oh, you own GreenRock. And I'm like, yeah, but I've owned it for 3 years of its 21-year existence. Like, I am not, like, but, like, when you talk about these people that come in that want to, you know, let's say lend you money, finance, you know, go do more things, go do this, go do that, you know, they oftentimes, they're like, well, he has this place, he has this place, he has this place, and look how successful they are. And I'm like, okay. Well, I've kept them successful, maybe made them more successful. But, you know, sometimes I'm like, well, just so you guys know, I didn't start this place. It's just not, that's not my business model, but I certainly can go out and get more places, which is why when I go to try to get financing for deals and things like that, I tell them, this is my business strategy. I'm going to go out and purchase already successful businesses, whether they're a restaurant, whether they're, you know, I don't own any hotels, but that's part of the hospitality stuff. Hotels. You know, I've gotten pitched on very different markets recently. And, you know, as long as I feel comfortable in how my valuation process is and do the Warren Buffett model of having good management in place there, you know, I don't see why I wouldn't go explore other avenues and other industries to be buying companies in. I don't know. It doesn't seem like there's a reason why not to. So regardless of how Elon made his money and how he is, you know, Unless you want to have a conspiracy theory about how the Saudis actually are trillionaires, which it seems as though people seem to want to think, and based off the fact that Phil Mickelson was the highest paid athlete this year in the world, I would tend to agree with you. They might be trillionaires.
Well, didn't it? I think Elon said that
Putin's yeah,
way richer.
Putin's
than
the
him.
Richest. So, but these things, at the end of the day, these people, just, they have access to different types of money. You know, they didn't start Amazon. They live off of Saudi Arabia, or they live off of Russia, or they have access to trillions of dollars, but, you know, they themselves aren't worth that. You know what I'm saying? Type of thing. It seems like that's kind of where they're getting these people are richer than me type thought processes. And I'm sure Putin has signed over some of these assets to himself, but it is. I think that's kind of where that's going. But that's neither here nor there. I do believe that Twitter is. I hope that is going to do quite a nice job, because I do. I think that Elon is a an intelligent guy, and it seems like he's doing wonderful things over here at Twitter. It's got Sean Light on board, so a guy who has notoriously stayed off Twitter for the last however many years. He hasn't been really around Twitter much, but. I have another topic I'd like to discuss, Sean, and this leads us more into the win model of the sports gambling world, which will lead me to my next 30-second ad read. WynnBET is bringing the excitement of Wynn Las Vegas online sports betting and casino play. Getting all your favorite teams, players, and sports, from boosted parlays to live in-game odds in every major sport. They have what you need to win. Sign up today and use promo code XSWC1. After placing your first $100 wager, you'll receive $100 to bet with. There is also a $50 casino bonus for those in New Jersey and Michigan as a first-time player. Again, the promo code is XSWC1. Offer subject to change. Terms and conditions at WynnBET.com. Must be 21 to participate. Only available in Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Louisiana, Michigan, New York, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia. Almost had it. The World Cup. Now, we all saw the Budweiser stuff and how they are probably going to sue and probably win in some capacity their money back. But let's just talk on a very small micro scale, because I mentioned this kind of thing to you the other day, and I think it could be an interesting little small business topic to talk about to end the podcast and the end the Twitter space. And it's the fact, and this is what I told you, and we'll just go from here. I didn't gamble on the USA game, the USA Iran game. I learned that's the correct pronunciation, Iran. I did not gamble on said game. However, as a small business owner in a town where bars are quite prevalent, one of my bars is, I would consider, the best sports bar in town, in Texas, Arizona. And then I have one bar that is a definite soccer bar, with Mick Swiggins. And although I did not gamble on the World Cup, I stand to either make or lose significant amount of money based off if the U.S. won or did not win. Now, first things first, Italy not qualifying for the World Cup definitely hurt business for us, because we have a quite a large contingency of Italian Americans in Hoboken and New York City, just in the New Jersey area. And that, you know, they often come out and support the Italian national team when they're playing in the World Cup. They're often better than the United States, so they last longer, and that certainly helps us. But on top of that, if the U.S. were to lose against Iran and not move on, they would not be playing on Saturday at 10 a.m. Now, typically speaking, we open at, say, 11 a.m. on a Saturday morning. We will now open at 8 a.m. and have 2 hours pregame. We'll probably be shoulder to shoulder, because people will come out for that game. We'll probably be shoulder to shoulder for that game starting at, let's say, 8:15. So we're going to be at capacity very quickly. I would imagine we have a line at 7:30. So we'll be at capacity very quickly for that game. And now we'll have an hour and, we'll say, 2 full hours before the game starts of sales, where we now 3 hours prior to even usually opening. And then you have the game. The game, funny enough, guys, the game actually doesn't make us a ton of money during, because everyone's sitting there watching. No one, you know, you guys will order another beer, or maybe they'll order some apps for the table. But as far as really turning out and making a lot of money, you don't really make a ton during the game itself. And funny enough, soccer is such an interesting way of playing, because they don't have commercial breaks. It's 45 minutes of straight soccer. So that's 45 minutes of, you know, of me milking. I do the same thing. I milk my beer because I'm just watching the game. I'm not really ordering a ton of things. And then halftime comes around and people start ordering again and starts picking back up. But the real crux of it, the real nuts and meat of this bone, is that 2 hours from 8 to 10 a.m. that I typically would not be making any money. I wouldn't even be open. Is now a huge part of the sales that day. And although if the U.S. didn't win, I wouldn't be open for it. The difference in whether or not the U.S. wins or not, whether or not I make money or not, almost felt like gambling on the game, even though obviously I didn't buy McSwiggins for the World Cup. It almost felt like gambling on the game. And you don't think of these things when you're buying businesses and when you're doing these things. You don't think of, you know, these impactful things that will happen. Weather, another one that's a huge part of a business. If it's I don't know what you're laughing about, but if it's raining, we lose a ton of money. People don't come out, and you just think, oh, it's Friday night, we're gonna do X amount, or very close to that every time. It's just not the case. And there's small micro things that are, you know, a much bigger scale. You think about what you're doing a year, that's really that's meaningful. But this U.S. game, I found myself in the second half, nervous, and being like, gosh, I hope we fucking win. You know, this is huge. You know, this is thousands of dollars on the line for me personally, but also my investors. It is a huge, huge freaking thing. And you don't see it in your line of work, Sean. At least I don't think you do. Do you have anything you can compare to yourself in your own business?
Well, I mean, yes and no, right? Like, It reminds me when you're talking about yesterday, me and Patrick were sitting on the couch and we watched the Christmas tree lighting in Rockefeller Center. And we started watching it. It was 3 hours long. Like, they had a 3 hour special on NBC for this thing. And I turned to Patrick at one point and I go, this is just a load of bullshit. Like, this is just a concocted special to create a more valuable advertising opportunity for their sponsors so that they could run commercials and probably charge higher prices during that special than they would if they were, you know, watching the 6 o'clock news. And Patrick's like, yep, like, that's definitely what's going on here. And then after the lighting was a Kelly Clarkson Christmas song special. And that's like, I'm sitting there and thinking of it, like, it's all about that. It's all about those things, like creating that scenario that gets people excited, gets people in front of the TV, and gets more advertising dollars in the door. So, like, you think of the World Cup, and it's like the World Cup is the same thing, where it's like it gets all of these people excited, and while it's not creating for advertisers, for you it's creating it for the bars and the restaurants and the soccer community, and they're getting excited and they're buying gear and they're watching the team and they're buying beers and everybody's going and they're having a good time, and now you're hanging a goal, it's like shots around the bar, and like all that stuff really matters. And you know, in my business, it's you know, I don't think like that specifically is all that helpful, but there's a lot of opportunities. Like, I saw a lot of people in my world leverage when Will Smith slapped Chris Rock, and now they were creating all these like random like ads, pictures of Chris Rock getting smacked, and you know, clever little memes to hook people into an ad, into a new offer or something like that, and you know, little things like that. And you know, I use the seasons as how I advertise for the business. Like, I'll do my December promotion is 5 golden gifts, and we use that. We use Christmas as that. So like, when things pop up like that, like, yeah, we use those opportunities because it's literally anything just that gets people excited, engaged, and looking at whatever it is that you're doing, and then making them an offer. And that's what the World Cup has been, and extending it. The longer you do it, the more advertising, the more capital generating activity is, to get away from like the monotony of day to day. Like, people go back and they're not excited about drinking at 7 o'clock in the morning anymore because it's normal life. And now that, you know, revenue generating opportunity is now gone. But there's just there, like, when you look around it at commerce, you know, the economics of business, it's all revolving around these revenue generating opportunities. That's where Valentine's Day has come from. St. Patrick's Day has come from. Cinco de Mayo comes from. You know, it's Christmas, Thanksgiving, Columbus Day. Like, all of these things have turned into revenue generating opportunities to get people excited about something, get you watching, get you engaged in some sort of activity, and then they're just going to just throw offers at you nonstop, because that's the thing that actually generates revenue for any business, is the attention of the consumer. And like, that's what the World Cup is to a bar like McSwiggin's. That's what all of these opportunities are if people make World Cup specials. My business could just as easily make a World Cup special as it could a December special. And that's, you know, that's when I hear you talk about stuff like that, this is what business is to me, is like, these, the find anything you can to get people excited, engaged, and watching, and then just give them an offer, some offer to the right person, and you're going to make money. That's literally the whole game. That's when you want to tie it in. You talk about Dave Portnoy, like, he just has to find a way to do that with his business. Get people excited, get people watching, get people engaged, and make them a quality offer. And he'll use his own personal reputation capital to sell the first batch. But if it sucks, like, done. That's business always speaks. Business always speaks the truth. And that's like all the stuff that you're saying here. Like, that's what that is to me.
It is. And funny enough, I am super excited to go watch the World Cup. I don't drink at 7 a.m. anymore. That's just, you know, I did one SantaCon in my life, and yeah, I remember waking up with Anthony Cirillo, shout out AC, and yeah, I made bacon, egg, and cheeses at like 5 in the morning, And me, him, and my sister, or our sister, came out and ate bacon, egg, and cheeses and immediately started drinking. And
yeah, and that's what SantaCon is, right? It's just a stupid-ass event that gets people excited about something stupid and creates a revenue opportunity for somebody else.
Something different that gets everyone excited. And now, like, you know, this Saturday, I've always liked, you know, soccer or football, whatever you want to call it. I've always liked it. But, like, I don't really care to watch the MLS. And, you know, the European Soccer League is, or leagues for that matter, is usually on at, like, 7 in the morning. So it's not really my cup of tea. But I've always enjoyed it, so I love the World Cup. And, you know, I'm taking it easy Friday night. I bet you some of my bars take a hit Friday night. You know, Green Rock in Texas probably won't take a hit because, you know, that's just, when everyone goes out, they're going to start there, so they'll get the capacity. But maybe some of these other, you know, those other bars might take a little bit bigger of a hit on Friday night because people will stay in to get, because they're going to be out at McSwiggins or going to be out at Mulligan's, which is down the street from us, at 7:30 in the morning. You know, getting ready for the soccer game and want to feel good for it. They're going to be excited for it. They want to be able to crack open that beer at 8 a.m. at McSwiggins and feel good, not feel hungover, not have to be, you know, going through like a hangover to try to do it. And I'm similar. I'm going out to the city on Friday night, but I'm going out with my my parent or our parents again. And, you know, but it's, you know, a relaxing evening so that I can wake up at 7:15 in the morning, feel fantastic. And look forward to going, you know, taking the walk down to maybe Submaster. Shout out Submaster. Get a bacon, egg, and cheese. Sit there, have a nice bacon, egg, and cheese with a bottle of water, and then go over to McSwiggins, order a cup of coffee, get through that cup of coffee, and now have whatever drink it is I want to have. And, you know, but I want to feel good for that. I'm at the age now where I don't want to be fighting through hangovers at 7:30 in the morning and cracking open a Bud Light, which is just not my drink of choice in any capacity. But you know, I don't want to be doing that stuff anymore. So it is. You're right. It's just different events. And, you know, instead of, you know, talking about on Saturday like we always do at McSwiggins, oh, we have, you know, $5, you know, Budweisers this week. Like, no one gives a shit. You know,
no one cares, man. It's not. It doesn't rock the boat nearly enough.
The only thing that, in my opinion, that those things do is just puts McSwiggins in your face. And then you're like, yeah, I'll go. Let's go to McSwiggins. I just saw a post by them. And it'll go over there. But then, very few people, if any, probably zero, are coming for the $5 Budweiser. So it's it. But now it's like, oh, World Cup. We're open up at 8 a.m. Get here quick because we're going to be at capacity by 8:15. Because Mulligan's is open at 7,
yep.
And we think they're going to be at capacity at 7:15. And the moment they're open, they send everyone over to us. So we're going to be at capacity at 8:15. Then we'll send everyone over to, you know, Texas, Arizona. Texas, Arizona, it's probably too big to get to capacity early, but they'll have people. Green Rock have some people. So it will be a very profitable day for us, but it's just different. It's something exciting, something different that just you don't get to do all the time. And then in 4 years from now, you know, it'll be in the United States. And hopefully the main city is New York City. I have to imagine it would be. And we'll be right outside of it. And I hope to see, you know, people from all different types, all different countries come to McSwiggins. That'd be pretty sick to see different types of, all these different types of flags. You know, we had when the USA and England played, we had an England flag in there, which I'm not super surprised by. But that was cool. That was cool to see a little rivalry there for U.S. soccer. And now, you know, we play the Netherlands. I die seeing Netherlands flags. But, you know. It's just, again, it's like you said, it's like a different thing, and it's also from a business perspective something you just don't think about when you're buying places, and you don't think about these small things that do make differences, specifically if you look at it at a micro standpoint, you do certainly make differences in your business and how much money you make. So, other than that, though, I ain't got nothing left, Sean. I think this was, as expected, a topic we came up with in 14 seconds prior to starting the podcast, and it has led to 50 minutes of conversation.
It's just how we do it, baby. It's how we do it. We entertain
the people. Let's aim. let's look at this. While you guys are listening, we can listen to my schedule for the next week. Next Wednesday. You want to just aim for Wednesday? Try to do all the Wednesdays. Wednesdays at let's say, 10 a.m. Or you want to do early, 9:30 a.m.?
I like it. And we'll get in and think of some stuff to talk about, and we can schedule it here on Twitter, and that would be helpful too. Get people to, you know, chime in and stuff too. Yeah, that's always nice.
A good thing. But all right, until next time, guys. Enjoy the World Cup. Go to the United States. Hopefully, it's winter, go home now. So now we got PKs, which is where soccer really gets exciting. got PKs. This is like NCAA tournament now.
Spoken like a non-soccer player. Every soccer player on the planet hates PKs.
Oh, I love PKs.
And all we're like, bring out PKs.
Also, just a little fun little thing that I saw. Dumbasses in America on TikTok talking about how I can't get behind a game that can end in a tie. The literal NFL can end in a tie at any point. You dumbass. So just stupid people. But anyway, go United States, 10 a.m., 9 a.m., not that we're covering it, but 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Coverage starts. And I will be at McSwiggins at 8 a.m. If you're a local person in the Hoboken area, certainly go over to McSwiggins or Texas. It should be a great crowd. McSwiggins, though, I would suggest getting early. That is going to be the place, and it is electric, let me tell you. When the U.S. scored against Iran, the place erupted. So if you're a local guy or a girl and want to watch a game at a really cool venue that's going to go nuts, I would suggest McSwiggins. That's where I'll be. And if you see me, you can say hello, but I'll be off to the right. When you first walk into McSwiggins, on the right, there's a little corner that I love to sit in. And I'll probably have some type of drink in my hand. But until next time, guys, enjoy the weekend, and we'll see you Wednesday, 9:30 a.m. Wednesday, 9:30 a.m. For our next show.
Sorry, we're closed.